Very good. Good morning, guys. Welcome. Just to introduce myself, if anyone's not met me, I'm Mark. I think my name's been said a lot this morning. I've been in Leeds about 5 years or so, part of this community here. So we're going to kick off with the highly anticipated new CCL game show. Some of you will have seen this on our WhatsApps this week. We're going to be playing this game called Good versus Better. And what I'm going to do, actually first, I need to get my glamorous assistant up. Give a hand for Mr. Adrian Bairstow. Can we turn this one on as well? Is that all right? Amazing.
Hello. Okay.
Yeah, let's see if it stretches. Oh gosh. Very good, that worked.
Is that working?
I had in mind, Pointless with Richard Osman there. I think Adrian fits the part. These are the things you can do with a mentee when you mentor somebody. You can get them to do all sorts of fun stuff. So we've done some comparisons. We put out a survey on the CCL WhatsApp earlier this week to find out what you guys think is good and what's better, okay? So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna flash up some of those. We're gonna read the room first. So I'm gonna say one thing and another thing. You're gonna tell me, I don't know, put your hand up, shout which one you think is best, and then we'll go to Adrian, who will tell us what our survey said. Have you got the screen up?
Is that all working? Yeah, it's on.
Perfect. There we go. Very good. So our first one is toast toppings. So we've got jam on toast and we've got peanut butter on toast. So who votes for jam on toast? Wow. Oh, that's pretty conclusive, actually. Peanut butter on toast, anybody? There's a smattering. There's a remnant. Adrian, what does our survey say?
So according to our survey, it's kind of matching the audience, to be honest. So we're on jam on toast, it's on 62.5, and those are good maths, it's 37.5 for peanut butter on toast.
Wow, so it's a win for jam on toast then?
It's a big win, yes.
Wow, big win for jam on toast. Huge, very good, excellent. Fantastic, next one is our balmy beverages question. We had some tea and coffee on the door as we came in. So, votes for teas. Oh, wow, that's a big spread in the room. Votes for coffee? Oh, it's quite split there, actually. Adrian on the
survey? Yeah, this was a tough one for me. I don't really like either, so it's a bit like picking one bone, you want to be broken.
Treating your children, isn't it?
not quite. again, matching the audience, we got 66.7% for tea, and 33.3% for coffee.
Wow, very good. On the survey, actually, it seems to depend on what time of day. Like, in the morning, there was loads of coffee votes. In the afternoon, all the teas came through. Right, next one. Our Pawson pals. So who's voting here for dogs? Give me your hands up for dogs. Wow, that's quite big. And for cats? Okay. Adrian, what's...
Yeah, I'm a bit disappointed with that. So dogs is 69%.
Wow.
Cats is 31%.
For dogs. It's all the first ones at the moment. Right, next one. Winter or summer? Who's voting for winter? Oh, not that many. Surprising. Summers? Yeah, I think on a day like today.
I mean, winter's a lot more popular on this. 41.1% for winter, which I think was reflected there. But 58.9% for summer on this.
Yeah, so summer narrowly edges it on the survey.
Yeah, but again, this, it was a big, big, bigger difference.
Good spot there, AJ.
Thank you very much.
The next one. vacation views. Who prefers sunbathing on the beach? What was a smatter? How about hill walking in the great... Wow, that's insane. I can't believe that's so high.
Oh, we got a very sophisticated crowd.
Similar
in the survey, to be fair. So it was hill walking was 75.3, putting sunbathing at 24.7.
I think it was probably the views part that swung it. People like the views in the outdoors. Okay, moving swiftly on. Festive fare. So, who prefers having a fake or a plastic Christmas tree? Yeah, there's a few. There's a few strong voices there. How about a real Christmas tree? Wow, yeah, it's a sweeping win for the real Christmas trees.
I think there's a lot more people saying the fake Christmas tree on this than what were had their hands up there. So I think some people maybe lying there, but the real Christmas tree, that was 68.1 on this, whereas the fake was 31.9.
Wow, okay, yeah, cool. Here we go. So, two more to go, I think. Reality wrangles this one. So, who here prefers Strictly Come Dancing, if you know what? Oh, okay. There's a few very strong advocates of Strictly in the room. What about Great British Bake Off? Yeah, I think that's probably going to win out on this one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if it was me, I'd be turning the TV off. Bake Off was 73.9, and Strictly was 26.1.
Wow, so a huge win for Bake Off there, basically, that's what we're saying.
Yes, we are, yeah, a massive win, massive win.
Massive, a landslide. Okay, here we go. This is where it has all been building up to. The big one. There's been, I think, competing campaigns on the student WhatsApp group this week for red grits or green grits. Sorry I didn't get your poster up, Caroline. That's a shame. I'm surprised it wasn't plastered all around the hall. Right, okay, we ready. So, red grits. Who's the red grits fans in the room? Wow, okay, that's looking like a decent amount. Green grapes? Ooh, it's very tight in the room. It's too close to call, Adrian. What about on the survey?
Well, the survey is saying something a bit different, to be honest. We got a drum roll.
It's been very tight all week. It's been flipping and flopping.
You cut the tension with a knife in here.
Yeah.
So the survey says... red grapes are on. Anyone have a guess? Just build it up.
Come on, Adrian.
80?
No, nowhere near that close.
Nah, nowhere near there. Clueless. So yeah, red grapes are 63.9%. Which puts the green grapes at 36.1.
There we go. So red grapes take the win. There we go.
Thank you very much. Decision.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Adrian. Gosh. Wow, well, I'm glad CTL came to the right decisions. I hope that we can all agree on those at the end of the day, that red grapes are indeed superior. Very good. That was a little bit of fun to begin us off with a few trivial examples of where some things are good, but other things are just better, like red grapes. That's a theme that runs right to the heart of our readings this morning. But in fact, in our readings, those things have eternal consequences. They're not just trivial examples. So we're going to be looking at Hebrews chapters 8, 9, and 10 this morning. So if you're able to get Bibles or apps and so on out and turn to Hebrews chapter 8, that would be amazing. Is everyone getting there? Just about. Perfect. What you'll see is the very first line will say something like this. Now, the main point of what we are saying is this. Now, in the Greek that the book of Hebrews was originally written in, the very first word is this word up there, which is called kephalion. And the word kephalion is used in one other place in the New Testament to talk about a large sum of money. So what I think could be indicated by this is that it's kind of like the sum total of all that we've been talking about so far in the series is what's going to be coming up in these next few chapters. So it's probably worth us jogging our memory, having a quick remember about what's come so far in the series. So first off, we had Becca talking to us about Jesus as the Son of God, the reflection of God's glory. We then had Becky speaking to us about Jesus being greater than the angels and the message that they brought. We had Rich talking to us about Jesus being truly human and truly equipped to save humanity. And then Abby talking about how Jesus is a greater leader than Moses or than Joshua. And then finally, last week, we had Becca talking about Jesus as the permanent high priest in whom we can trust. And there was also a week from Claire in there where the author of Hebrews goes off on a bit of a tangent, but I've left that out for a bit. So each of these things, they're a bit like bricks in a building, building one layer on top of another as he's building together his argument about who Jesus is and what Jesus has done for us. And it is all building up to the main point, the sum total, which is what we're going to look at this morning. Now, I think that is summarized in this verse, Hebrews 8, verse 6, where it says, Jesus has now obtained a more excellent ministry, and to that degree, he is the mediator of a better covenant, which has been enacted through better promises. Now, I'm just going to pick up on a few key words in there. You'll see I've underlined the word better twice, linking back into our exercise at the start, good things and better things. But I've also highlighted that word mediator. That's the same sort of word as what Becca was talking about last week, the advocate, Jesus who stands on our behalf in between us and God. This week, we're going to be looking at the other word that I've highlighted there, which is covenant. Now, that word covenant is just really fundamental to the Jewish readers that would have been reading this work. It would have been fundamental to how they thought the whole world worked, how they thought the whole Bible worked. It was all to do with covenant. So it's probably worth me giving you a quick potted history, a quick potted summary of what covenant is. So covenant is basically just a bit of a fancy word for agreement. And the covenants in the Bible were all about the agreements on how God and man are to live together. So before the summer, some of you will remember from our Genesis series that there was a couple of covenants, a couple of agreements between God and man that cropped up there. There's the agreement between God and Noah that God would never destroy humanity ever again. And he put his rainbow over the earth as an example of that after the flood, saying, I'm never just going to wipe everybody out. I'm going to do something different this time. There was the agreement between God and Abraham that Claire was talking about in Genesis chapter 12, that if Abraham was faithful, then God would turn his descendants into a great nation that would go on to bless all the other nations in the world. Then there's, kind of the rest of the Old Testament is all working out the terms of the covenant, the terms of the agreement between God and man. How does this nation, how does the descendants of Abraham stay in relationship with God? And the most important image of that is the Mosaic covenant, the covenant between Moses and God, where Moses goes up Mount Sinai to meet God, and he comes back with 10 commandments that are the start of kind of the laws, the things that are going to guide the community life for the people of Israel. Now, those laws, they grow and grow and grow, and you get them all in the books. You get a whole selection of them in the books of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. You start to see some of those laws. But some of the most particularly important laws in there are about the sacrificial system. Basically, in that time, the people brought sacrifices to God at God's altar, And they those sacrifices basically made their relationship between them and God work. It was the basis on which that covenant, that agreement between them and God was made. So yeah, the final one that I've noted on there is the Davidic covenant, the covenant between God and David, which basically led to the forming and the creation of the temple in Jerusalem. And the temple was a permanent place for those sacrifices to take place, where people could come, give their sacrifices, and make their relationship with God right on a regular basis. So let's come back to the passage. I'm just going to grab some water. So what we get next in the passage is the longest quote of Old Testament in the New Testament, the very longest quote. And it's a quote from the prophet Jeremiah, who crops up a bit later on in the Old Testament. And it speaks of a day when God is going to make a new covenant, a new agreement between humanity and himself. And what the author of the Hebrews is saying is that day has come, that day is here today. So it's a really, really good quote from the Old Testament, and it'd be great to read it together this morning. So it says this. Oh, sorry, I've lost my microphone. The days are surely coming, says the Lord, when I will establish a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not like the covenant that I made with their ancestors. I will put my laws on their minds and write them on their hearts. I've just skipped over a little bit. And I will be their God. And they shall be my people. And they shall not teach one another or say to each other, know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest. For I will be merciful towards their iniquities, and I will remember their sins no more. I think that's really good. It's one of the most amazing parts of the Bible, really. That relationship between us and God. He'll remember our sins, our brokenness, the bad things that we do towards each other and towards him. He will remember those things no more. And instead, we get the opportunity to know God, each individually and intimately. Yeah, that day is today. And that idea would have been just completely radical and revolutionary to the Hebrew readers that first were reading this. It would have been a bit like, I don't know, when Galileo suggested that the earth revolves around the sun rather than the sun revolving around the earth. Or like when Edison like discovered the light bulb. It's just one of those things that totally changes the way that you experience the world and understand the world, how you think about yourself and your place in the universe and how you live as a result. Just totally changes if this is the way that humanity are allowed to live with God. So the rest of chapters 8 to 10 unpack this idea further. They say, yes, the old covenant was good, but the new covenant is better. So rather than me reading through how exactly that's done, I wanted to throw it back to you. So you might see on your spreadsheets, we're going to do round two of good versus better, but this time look at some of those things with eternal implications. So on your handouts, you might see you've got a little grid. Now, this isn't a test. It's not homework. Nobody's going to come and mark you or anything like that. But basically, it's an opportunity to look at some of the comparisons between the old covenant, the way that the people of Israel did it, and the new covenant, the new life that Jesus has brought. So yeah, there's some comparisons between there, between the old and new. If you go and have a look for the Bible references, that might help you in each of those grid boxes. basically, yeah, just try and fill out, if you can fill out one or two, if you can smash through the whole thing, whatever you can do, if you have some maybe conversations with the people around you, that might also be good. What are the differences between Old Covenant and New Covenant? Let's have a look at those three chapters. Is that all right for everybody? Does that make sense? Fantastic. I'll give you maybe 5 minutes. Yeah. Do whatever you can in that time. All right, I'm going to bring us back together there. Okay, how did you get on all right? I think you started to get some answers in the grid. It might be worth taking this exercise away with you this week and having another look, because there's just so much really good stuff. I mean, when I've been reading this passage to prepare for this week, there's just so much in there that I could have done. Okay, so I'm just going to quickly run through what I think are some of the answers to these questions. So the Old Covenant was made in an earthly realm. It was done sacrifices on this earth. The New Covenant is secured in the heavens, in the heavenly realm. That's where the New Covenant is made. Next, it's nature. The Old Covenant is a copy, it's a shadow, it's not quite the real thing. It's a bit like the fake Christmas tree that we talked about in that example. It's not the real thing, whereas the New Covenant is real and it's true. The status of the Old Covenant was growing old. It was passing away, getting out of use. But the New Covenant is built on better promises that last and won't go away. Who mediates? The Old Covenant was mediated by mortal human priests that, like what Becca was talking about, they died, they got old, eventually they had to stop doing their job. But the New Covenant is mediated by one eternal high priest who never dies, whose name is Jesus. And yeah, like I say, the Old Covenant, there was multiple priests. You might have read about all some of the different types of priests in the passage, but there's loads of different ones. Whereas in the New Covenant, there's just a single priest, Jesus, that has achieved everything for us. How many sacrifices in the Old Covenant? Loads of different types of sacrifices. You can read about them all in the books of the Old Testament. But in the New Covenant, there is once and for all sacrifice. It's all been done. Whose blood? In the Old Covenant, it was sacrificial animal blood that was given to secure that agreement between man and God. But in the New Covenant, it's Jesus who pours out his own blood as a sacrifice for many. And finally, the last two, they're quite similar. How effective was the Old Covenant? Well, it only had limited efficacy. It was only limited in its effectiveness. It could only cleanse the outside and for a limited period. Whereas the sacrifice that Jesus did was definitive. It cleanses us from the inside out, it cleanses our conscience, our minds, and our hearts. So whilst the Old Covenant couldn't bring perfection, the New Covenant can result in total and complete moral transformation. Yeah, definitely worth going back to some of that stuff later this week. For me, the analogy that really stood out in these chapters, this passage, was the two courts. You might have read something about that in the passage, the two-court system in the temple. And the author talks about the Hebrews, the people that he's writing to, being in the outer courts, which is good. But he says Jesus has made a way into the inner courts, into the Holy of Holies, into the place that only the one high priest was allowed to go once a year. And that's so much better. We get to see the Father face to face because of what Jesus has done. There's another sort of summary of this in Hebrews 10, 11, and 12. It says, each priest stands day after day at his service, offering again and again and again the same sacrifices that can never by themselves take away sins. But when Christ, when Jesus offered for all time a single sacrifice for sins, he sat down at the right hand of God. Now, in our society, many of us sit down to work. We sit down, like Adrian was doing, behind a laptop and get on with some work. Unless you've got one of those sort of sit-stand desks, which are a bit too fancy. We mostly sit down to get on with our work. But back then, people would have stood up to work, to labour, to do, I don't know, carpentry or building or all this sort of stuff. It requires you to be standing up. And that included the priests as well. They stood up when they gave their sacrifices. So here what we've got is a picture of Jesus. He's in the temple, but he's sat down. He's resting. His work is complete. He's sat next to God at the right hand of the Father. There is no more sacrifices that need to be done. It's all been completed. He's made us clean, and that is so much better. So I'm just going to read kind of the final bit of this passage. And I was wondering maybe if we could close our eyes whilst I read that. And just as an opportunity to take some of this in at a heart level, really. So it says this. Therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way opened for us through the curtain, that is, his body, and since we have a great high priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart, and with the full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience, and having our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. You know, not only is Jesus the perfect human, not only was he a great high priest, not only was he greater than Moses and Joshua and the angels, but he has made us a way to come near to the Father without shame and without condemnation. And I believe that Jesus is speaking to us this morning. He's saying that there's freedom for you in this room today. I believe that there might be people that have got sin and shame in the back of their minds. The worst of things rumbling around your head, things that have gone wrong, things that mistakes that you may have made. And you come to church every Sunday and you ask for some forgiveness, but Jesus is right there in front of you. He's the once and for all atonement for you. He has made all things right between you and God. And I think he's saying, you know, the outer courts are good, but take my hand and let's go somewhere better. Follow me to intimacy with the Father. And it's okay to come because I've made a way for you. You're free of what you'll carry. You're free of what you carry and what you've done. I've bore it all for you once and for all. So let's go and meet the Father. So I wonder if Russ potentially could come back and maybe let's have a time just reflecting on those promises, going to meet the Father, doing some business with him if we can.